Get ready for a night filled with unconventional, offbeat, and unusual topics with the brightest minds for our troubled times. Join Everett Thiemer and Kim Gandy at Extension 13 on the hotel floor that doesn't exist, where they dive into the deepest of the deep. Because beyond the deep, there is a deep.
A German computer programmer has made peace with possibly losing $240 million because of a forgotten password. Meanwhile, I lie awake at night wondering if my old Yahoo Mail account has been hacked to send spam. My name is Everett Thiemer, and beside me, by way of a dial-up modem and some duct tape, is Kim Gandy. And together, we are happy to have you, along with everyone listening in on the Spark Radio Network, with us. And while you're here, check out our website, extension13.com, where you will find all kinds of news, things we're talking about, and information about us and the show. There's even a chat room where someone's always stirring up trouble, and you can interact with us and other listeners. I have to say a quick thank you to Richard Black and the guys from Shark Island for letting us use some great music. Head on over to sharkislandmusic.com to hear even more and pick up their most recent CD, Bloodline 2.0, while you're there. Also, take a look at our Facebook page, facebook.com/extension13, where we post our schedule, information about our guests, and whatever makes us giggle until we pee just a little bit. And follow us on Twitter at Extension 13 Show, where we tweet stuff, because a tweet anywhere else is just a status update. Kim, happy weekend.
Dinner with some lovely friends. Tonight I get to spend it with you. Here on the radio, and our first hour, we get to spend it with Jonathan Mallard. John is from the Great White North and has dedicated his life to paranormal. He's a best-selling author, paranormal investigator, and he also hosts the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. His new book is Newfie EVP. I knew I was not going to say that correctly, but I'm going to let Jonathan come in and fix that for me. It's also Talking with the Dead from Newfoundland. So that's in our first hour. Everett, who do we have in our second hour?
In the second hour, we bring in singer-songwriter Donnie V to the show. He's known as the King of Power Pop. Donnie, if you remember, was the original voice of Enough's Enough. And many other hits, Fly High Michelle, New Thing, and my personal favorite, The World is a Gutter. He's going to talk with us about his personal journey that led to his new album, Beautiful Things. We're going to talk maybe a little bit about the 27 Club, how the music industry has changed, and if we have enough time, we're going to talk about what it's like coming back from the dead. Donnie was declared legally dead and came back. So that's what we're looking at in the second hour. But right now, Kim, we got to kick this off.
So welcome, Jonathan. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much for taking the time.
We're happy that you can come. I have to tell you that we actually was listening to you. I'm going to take a minute to plug, the Mallard Report, Jim Mallard. We were actually listening to the show when you were on, and I think Everett and I were actually in the duck pond being interactive with you that night. So that was a great interview. So if you haven't had a chance, check out themallardreport.com. He always a great supporter of us, and he actually connected us so you can come on our show tonight. So thank you, Jim.
And, you know, Jim, thank you so much for being my illegitimate brother from Pennsylvania, you know, and sharing the same last name. And the joke is that he's actually Illuminati because there's an I in his name, right?
he's got to sneak that I in there.
He does. He does. He's such a teddy bear, though. And a big shout out to you, Jim. Thanks for hooking me up once again. Really appreciate it.
So one of the things I mentioned when I did the introduction that you dedicated your life to paranormal, I know there's got to be a point where you really became interested in it. Was there a special thing that happened to you that made you really interested in the paranormal field?
Oh, my goodness. Is there ever? And, you know, I always make the joke whenever someone asks what got you into paranormal, I go, so how long do we got? An hour? OK, here I go. So the main takeaway from my story is that I got to tell you right up front that when I got into the paranormal, I was not a believer, and I was a very open atheist at that point in my life. And that is very, very important. The reason being is because my journey from atheist to paranormal believer started with some really, really bad news. 2009, I was working a career in health and wellness. So I was doing my thing, and I got some really bad news about my father. Found out he had 4th stage renal cancer. Dad was a very sick man upon diagnosis. He had renal cancer, 4th stage, which is pretty much a dead sentence. He's got it pretty much all over his body. It kind of spread everywhere. The prognosis wasn't too great. And, you know, as an atheist at that point in my life, it was, hey, John, guess what? He's pretty much toast. And, like, it's funny, you know, in those moments, I look back at myself and I wish I could have been there to say, hey, wait now, don't write him off yet. There's still a chance. But there really was very little chance in the realm of science. He was a dead duck, so to speak, pardon the pun. And Dad had, you know, just an amazing, amazing amount of something that I never had, which was faith. Dad's a very religious man, very open to prayer. Dad's the type of person who he's the classic, you know, I'm not going to say Catholic, but he's Anglican like myself. And he's the classic Anglican type guy who'd basically go to church whenever he could. And he was very open about that. The day I went up to confront him, I actually found out that he was sick and like couldn't face him for 2 days. It was so upsetting. I remember climbing the stairs and opening the door to his bedroom. And he's just heaved up on his bed, feet crossed, hands over his head, watching MASH. And like everyone knows the theme song from MASH. So I'm like, oh, God, this is going to be the backdrop song to me and him talking about him having cancer is the theme from MASH. So anyway, this is going on in the background. Oh, my God, please tell me you have the theme from MASH. You can just splice in here right now. Anyway, so he's kind of chilling out on the bed. And I look at him, I said, I couldn't even get the words out. Like anybody who's ever been in that situation, like you really don't know what to say. And he just looked at me and said, I'm going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine. This isn't my battle. This is God's battle. This is all his. And that's the way it is. So don't you worry a thing. Now, as an atheist at that point, the first thing that popped through my head is, well, this is just a really spiritual guy in good spirits and getting ready for a fight. And, you know, I support him in that, of course. But, you know, my atheist mind says, what? He's still toast, no matter what kind of, shall we say, positive thought he has towards it. It started there. You know, we had gotten into imaging and stuff like that with him to see how big these tumors were and all this. And it was just one bad prognosis after another. Anyway, he started his chemo treatments, and I believe it was 4 weeks in. He actually found out on his birthday when he was diagnosed, which is just the way it worked out was ridiculous. He found out in August. So he never went for his first real scan until I believe it was early October after he had started his chemotherapy. And I remember going over to his house, and mom, like my mom, also very atheist person. Okay, so she's like the polar opposite of my father. Doesn't believe in anything, right? She's sitting at the table and she's just in shock. And I'm like, oh God, what's the bad news? And dad was just there laughing and smiling. He's like, oh, you know, that's some good news here. You know, everything is stable. And I was like, wow, that's great. That's wonderful. Now, it's not unheard of. Some cancers can go stable. And when I say stable, I don't mean remission. When I say stable, I mean it's not spreading anymore. So right. He was stable. His blood test came back great, wonderful. Fast forward 6 months from there. He goes in and then he calls me on the phone the day after he got his results. And he's like, John, you got to talk to me. Come in and talk. And of course, now what do you think my brain thought? Oh, no, more bad news, right? No, the tumors had shrunk. So this drug that he was on was not meant to do that. Like, I don't know if you guys know much about chemotherapy or not, but you know, it's a different type of treatment that shrinks tumors. He's just on chemotherapy. They're not supposed to shrink, so to speak. And they kept on shrinking. Dad was diagnosed in 2009 with one of the most lethal forms of cancer and rapidly spreading cancer you could have in your body. And I was over at his house 2 days ago watching the Detroit Red Wings get their asses handed to him by the Hurricanes. Wow, Dad's still very much alive.
That is an amazing story. Do you think it was his mindset that cured him?
I think it's beyond that. Mm-hmm. It's a mindset is something we have about something. It's something our mind is focused upon. Something. Dad has more than that. Dad had the ability to hand his sickness over to a higher power, and I could not help it. You know, after a few years of him beating the odds, I kind of started opening my eyes to the idea that maybe there is something to prayer. And from a different point of view, too, I was very well known for taking the religious ideas out of paranormal investigation. And that rubs a lot of people the wrong way, man. It really does. And you don't really believe a whole lot in what's going on around you until you experience it yourself. But my dad is my first brush ever with the paranormal. And scientifically documented brush with the paranormal and continues to be one. In fact, people write their exams in pharmacy school here. That's the perfect example. And his name has come up, not necessarily on the paper, but his actual case, he's documented. He's now the second longest living renal cancer patient, stage 4 in Atlantic Canada. So he's a walking, breathing miracle. And wow. To anybody out there who's really, really needs a miracle in their life right now, can I remind you right now that they still happen? Can we start there? Einstein had just a brilliant idea about it all. Either everything's a miracle or nothing is. And idea that my dad continued to defy those odds and continues to defy them to this day is just absolutely incredible. Did you ever get the gift of a second cancer? 2 years ago, Dad got diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma on top of his renal stage 4 cancer and where it had spread. He also has polyps all over his liver and different things, but he also got diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is not uncommon for someone who's on chemotherapy, his type of chemotherapy. It is a risk, but I mean, he had already lived 9 years at that point. We accepted it. So the doctors came in and said, well, in order for us to teach it, we got to follow the rules here. And the rules here in Canadian healthcare is this. We got to take you off your renal cancer drug and start treating you for Hodgkin's, because Hodgkin's is absolutely lethal. One of the most treatable cancers on the planet, but absolutely lethal if you don't treat. So they took him off his other medication and then put him on the stuff for Hodgkin's. So Dad was in hospital clinging to life for a couple of months. Like, we almost lost him twice, actually. And he beats Hodgkin's lymphoma. So my dad is like just crazy lucky guy. Anyway, he goes out, he rings the cancer bell, which is like our little tradition. I don't know if you guys have that in the States or wherever you're from.
We do. But
the idea that when you're done your treatment, you get to ring the bell. And he rang the bell. And then he went back for a test a couple of weeks later, knowing full well that he hadn't been treated in months for his renal cancer. So he was over his Hodgkin's. Now he's going for renal. Doctor gave him a month off all chemo to let his body heal a little bit. Went and got tested, and something insane happened. doctor looked at him and said, "We can't find any tumors. There's nothing here." He said, "There's a few small specks in different places from where the tumors were. And one seems to be completely dissipated. We can't find it and we can't explain it."
That is a miracle. Well, my mother has cancer. So, I mean, the fact that to hear that story gives a lot of people out there that's listening a lot of hope.
Dad got a year off chemotherapy altogether, no treatments whatsoever before he got re-diagnosed there a few months back. God love his heart. He really needed that year off. After 10 years of being on chemotherapy, Dad aged, his body aged about 30 years. It's insane what this does to your system. But to bring it back to my journey into the paranormal, when it came time for a friend of mine who was a private investigator who actually worked for a couple of security situations here in town, when he came to me and we started talking about just weird and wonderful things, he said, "Man, I got all this gear and stuff. We should go ghost hunting sometime just for a laugh." And like, I didn't really think much of it at the time. I don't even know how we got on the subject of talking about it, but I was like, "Yeah, that'd be fun, I guess. Why not? Let's go somewhere crazy haunted like Cape Spear." And he was like, "Okay." Cause you know, I've always heard the ghost stories about Cape Spear. I guess my little atheist mind was open just enough to maybe go try. We go down to Cape Spear. We have a couple of recorders. He actually had some really nice equipment, actually, like parabolic mics and stuff like that, like stuff that the amateurs wouldn't have. He had it all. So it was really cool to go down there with him. And he kind of set stuff up in a couple of halls down there. We went back to the parking lot, which is about a 10-minute walk. And, you know, just to give some background of Cape Spear, this is the most easterly point in Canada. It's rocky cliffs, it's a lighthouse, and it's abandoned military bunkers in the middle of nowhere, no radio noise, nothing. It's amazing for paranormal investigation. Like, probably one of the few places on the planet where you can run a spirit box and get legit stuff without having to worry about radio contamination. Anyway, I'm nerding out. Sorry. We kind of go down, we leave the recorders going, we go back to the car for a cigarette. I used to smoke at that time. I've been quitting now 4 years as of January 1st. Go me. That's beside the point. We're sitting in the car for about 45 minutes and we go back and get our recorders. We didn't think we caught anything at all. We come back to the car, we plug it in and we start listening. And about a half hour in, we're just goofing around. Not even, at this point, we've given up. And all of a sudden we hear a cell door slam and it is loud. It is very in your face and it is very, very real. And I look over at him and I say, "What the hell was that?" And he said, "Dude, we got to listen at it again." Went back and heard it. And sure enough, it sounded like a cell door slamming. Cape Spear at this point had no open cell doors. Everything is cemented into the walls. I think what we caught that night by some fluke, by some miracle, was actually a residual haunting. I think we got the sound of the cell doors closing down there when they used to capture prisoners during the war. So one of the really cool things about me is that I actually got, not only did I get to go on my first paranormal investigation as a goof bag with no knowledge whatsoever, I actually lucked out and caught a legit EVP. It was so exciting. Anybody out there who's into paranormal research of any sort, once you get one, you can't stop. It's just like Pringles, the paranormal Pringles, man. Once you pop, you can't stop. You get one EVP, you find one crazy thing on an investigation, you, my friend, are going to be hooked. Fast forward 4 or 5 years from there. Yeah. Like it's very noticeable for a lot of people. Like that high of catching something, especially when you're a non-believer. Oh, it just shook me so much. 4 years later, I write my first book. This is back in 2014. My God, how many years ago is that now? That seems like forever ago, right? That's 7 years ago I wrote that book. Insane. It ended up being a bestseller, really well known here in Newfoundland. I'm the guy the people on the radio invite in to talk about ghosts at Halloween time here. It's kind of like my little province now. I love it here. The main takeaway, though, it's not every single story with the paranormal has to be dreary and miserable and people being possessed and all this Linda Blair stuff. Sometimes it's really uplifting, like my dad's story. And, you know, I'm really glad you let me share it here tonight on your show.
Well, you know, one of the things – oh, I'm sorry, Kim, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I've asked all the questions so far, so it's your turn.
One of the things that I like to work into every show is super demons. And it's a long story how the phrase super demons came about. But what is your take on, like you said, that not everything has to be so dark and dreary within the paranormal, but it seems like, you know what, maybe the last 5 years, everybody likes to label every bump in the night some form of demon. Is that just a trend? Is that people jumping on the, I want to be a demonologist highway, or what is that?
Oh, I can explain that. And that's been around far longer. That's in every single religious doctrine ever made. That is human nature. We want the bad guy to go up against. We want to be the hero. We want to go to the haunted house and evict the villain, which is the demonic entity. I'm convinced that on TV, we're trying to sell cornflakes with demonic entities. I'm sorry, but someone has to say it. And as somebody who's put thousands of hours into research and wrote a best-selling book on the topic of electronic voice phenomena, I have something to confess. Paranormal investigation in the real world is incredibly friggin' boring. Okay, there, I said it. You're sitting alone in a room for 5 hours. You're going home for 15 hours to go over said recorders. It's very boring and very unrewarding for the most part. Human nature, we need a reason. We need a big why to keep doing something that boring and that tedious. We need a reason to keep doing it. What it is, it's very simple. Check out this super cool thing I caught, this demon. Sounds a lot better than, I caught this at a house last week. It's all about perception. I believe the mere fact that people even say it is a demon pretty much disqualifies it as a demon. The reason being, if it truly was a demon, if it truly was a demon that you're dealing with, a demonic entity, there would be no words to describe what you're dealing with.
Well, that's always been opinion. That's always been my take, that if these demons are so powerful and so out to get us, why do we all still exist? Because it seems like they could destroy us at their leisure, at their whim, whenever they felt like it. They don't need to make little bumps in the night or peek around corners just to kind of give me the shivers at 3 a.m.
Well, here's the other part of it, too. We right away, and even in what you've just said then, we try to humanize this stuff. Like, why do we think demons have the ability to peek around a corner? Why are they human-like? Like, if they truly do exist, and, you know, there's a lot of people out there who have done a lot more research than I have on that topic of demonology and things like that. There's one common thread through all of it. It's usually the unseen, the unknown that people want to hear about. Very rarely is it these demonic poltergeist Linda Blair stories that make it out, shall we say, because they're too easy to dismiss. That's why you got stuff like Slender Man, which is just a story someone came up with on Creepypasta a few years ago. Or this, what was it, last year or so, the Siren Head. Have you ever seen this thing before? These things are made up by people and put out in videos, and then suddenly they become ghost stories and people start seeing Siren Head and Slender Man. It's no different than the whole demon thing. Someone somewhere around the way said, demons aren't real, demons are real. Let's make a story about it. And truthfully, I don't think demons, I have never seen one myself or dealt with a really, really dark entity myself, like for many years. But that being said, I've never gone looking for them either. So I guess on the topic, I'll remain ignorant and blissful.
That's what I'm saying. Ignorance. You don't want to wish that. That's what I always, when we get on this subject, you don't want to create that. And you wonder sometimes, are people manifesting that? And that's why I always say, hey, I don't want anything to do with that. but you wonder if people do manifest that.
And you know, Kim,
I think it's interesting, actually, that do we have the ability to manifest these things? Like, if someone comes up with the idea of, say, Slender Man, do we have the ability to put this, because our mind, like, realize that what separates us from every other animal on this planet is our ability to create from the subconscious, right? It's the only thing that makes us any different than a dolphin. Like, they're just as smart as we are. But we can, you know, dream up a rocket and shoot it to the moon. Is it possible that we could do this on a different plane, though? Is it possible? Is it possible that if I think Slender Man is real, or I think the Toronto subway monster is real, or something, I can actually make this thing manifest into the real world? I think that's a really interesting topic. I tell you, I'd like to see who's manifesting Bigfoot. You got to stop doing that, guys.
Well, do you think then that all of these people who watch the paranormal TV shows, and there are a couple out there in particular that really seem to promote the idea of everything's a demon. Do you think that the people watching those shows, then they kind of get that in their mindset and in their own environment, in their own real lives, they then are able to manifest the demon? And I ask that, I guess I should preface this with this. We've talked to a lot of paranormal investigators and paranormal people on this show. And when we ask them about demons, many of them say, yeah, they might exist, but I've maybe run into one instance where it could have been a demon. Maybe demons exist to hold us to the TV show through the commercial break. So I kind of wonder, can people watching the shows then begin to, just through that mindset, manifest them in their own lives?
I think that's a really interesting idea. But just to go back to the idea of what a TV show actually is, it's a show. Anybody who's worked on those paranormal investigating shows will tell you two things. Number one, you're only seeing a tenth of the actual work that goes in each episode. Everything is cut, everything is spliced, and the 15 million things that happen on an investigation that were kind of mediocre are going to be erased, and what you're going to see is the potential demon in the closet, because, once again, that's what sells the cornflakes, the boring and the bland, which is paranormal investigation. It's the truth. The reality of it is a lot of these shows are doing just that. That being said, the agenda of the show is to hold the viewer's attention. Okay? I believe in my heart of hearts that anybody who's on those shows will truthfully tell you that you are missing out on hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of investigating. You're only seeing a couple of minutes of this dramatized for the viewer's enjoyment. Do I think there's anything wrong with that? No. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, actually. Reason why is because I've done my research and I can distinguish between what's real and what's not. If you are truly into, shall we say, romance, might I suggest going on a date yourself sometime and maybe not watching The Bachelor and getting unrealistic expectations? That is exactly what's going on with paranormal investigation on TV shows. It's the truth. And sometimes it stings, sometimes it hurts, but it is true.
Hey, Jonathan, with that, we have to step out and pay some bills. Can you tell everybody where they can find your work before we go?
Of course. Don't forget, guys, the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, a show that's kind of all over the place, just like me. You'll really, really enjoy it. There's paranormal news. There's a cryptid corner where we highlight a special cryptid every single month, and always a special guest. Lots and lots of bonus episodes. You can find that anywhere where good podcasts are, well, can't really say sold because it's free, or held. Hopefully not hostage underneath the stairs. Also, don't forget to check out my book, Newfie EVP, Talking with the Dead in Newfoundland. It's available on Amazon.ca.
Hey, Jonathan, when we come back, I'd like to talk to you, if you're open to it, about the idea of old technology versus new technology in the collection of EVPs.
Oh, I love that idea, especially since I've done extensive research on Constantine Radev. This is going to be really fun. Oh. All you nerds, don't go away.
Fantastic. We'll be right back on Extension 13.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Hope you enjoyed your meal. And I just want to say, He's lucky to have a brother like you.
Lucky? Caring for my brother is far from easy. But he's a part of me, like my arms and legs, so I'll be his. No time for tired. Nothing can disable this love. He needs me, but I'm the lucky one, even though I need help now and then.
If you're caring for a loved one, visit aarp.org/caregiving for care guides and community. Support for your strength. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Open calendar. What's my schedule looking like?
Next Thursday, you will be caught in an emergency flash flood between Park and First Street.
What? No, no, that doesn't work. I'm busy then. Decline. Decline.
Floods don't exactly work around your schedule. Disasters don't plan ahead. But you can. It starts with talking to your loved ones about making an emergency plan. So don't wait. Communicate. Visit ReadyLA.org. Brought to you by the City of Los Angeles Emergency Management Department, FEMA, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Extension 13. Thank you so much for sharing your evening with us. Tonight, we are talking to Jonathan Mallard. We're talking EVPs, paranormal, and all things kind of weird and spooky. Even got that old word super demon in a little bit there. Now, before the break, we teased you a little bit with the idea of talking EVP technology. And Jonathan, this is one of those things that, you know, I look at, I personally love listening to and seeing EVPs. But, you know, when I go back and look at some of the stuff from the 70s, it seems almost more valid than some of the stuff we're collecting today. And part of that, I hate to admit this, and I know people are going to dislike me for saying this, but part of that is the technology.
I don't dislike you for saying the truth. That's okay. Listen, I got some bad news. I was born in 84, so I'm doing the best I can with what I got. Okay, so first off, let's just start off by saying, wait. Because it's not the world's fault that it got so advanced and surrounded itself with constant radio waves, microwaves, Bluetooth everywhere. Like, it's really easy to capture an EVP these days because guess what? The air is full of coded messages everywhere. So back in the 70s, I would probably say, yeah, it might be a little bit more valid. That being said,
well, it's
many
funny.
EVPs from back in the day, so to speak, have been kind of disregarded. And the reason being is because it was common practice to recycle records. And they scrub the top of the record, and sometimes music and words and stuff would still be underneath said record. That is something that was discovered. Also, the method of which the things were captured. I do believe that old school magnetic recording tape is by far the best way to capture EVP. That being said, it's also extremely costly, almost impossible to use these days, and might I add, none of it plugs into a computer for you to copy and paste to show all your friends. So yeah, there's good and there's bad about the old school equipment. Can I go even more old school with you? Let's go really old school. So the first things we used to use were tables. Back in the spiritual movement, baby. Table tipping and stuff like this. These were how people talked to advanced beings back then. We don't do any of that anymore. We're capturing these weird sounds on recorders that should not be there. So to kind of lead a little credence to your question, do I think things were more valid back then? Yes and no. I think they were more valid method-wise because there was less room for error with less radio waves, less stuff that could be captured by accident. But here's the really big but. There was also a hell of a lot of stuff that was probably missed. Most things that come through, most examples of electronic voice phenomena, the true examples, okay, almost always come in under 6 decibels. good luck hearing that on a pair of headphones from back in like the 40s or 50s.
Well, I'll tell a story quick here. It was kind of a precursor to what I was going to do in my adult life. But as a kid, I think I was like 8 or 9. I had one of those old reel-to-reel cassette recorders before the cassette recorder, actually. It was an old reel-to-reel recorder, just a little portable one. And, you know, as a kid, I was probably playing radio or doing something like that. And I put on a new reel. I do know that because my parents, you know, they made sure to buy me some new magnetic tape for that thing. And I put it on and I played for a little bit or did whatever it was I did. And then I walked away and I just let it go. So it recorded like 10 minutes of just the empty room. And when I went back and listened to it, you could hear what sounded like people walking in the room and murmuring. Now, at that time, I wasn't into the paranormal. I was into apparently playing radio. But I go back to that and think, if I had known back then to save that tape, because either that tape was somebody messing with me, and I don't believe my parents would mess with me in that way, or it was a verifiable EVP that I would love to have today, I guess I just wish I still had that, because now you look at so many things and it's an electronic file and you know, it's run through Audacity or any other kind of program that somebody wants to run it through, and they can add things and they can edit things. I just have a hard time in many ways trusting the validity of what we see out there today, even though I'm always looking and listening for that next really awesome EVP.
You know, you're right in a lot of ways. And that was one of the bad things about back then. It was this very hard to stockpile these things. Like, let's just go back to the bare basis of electronic voice phenomena. Listen, this is a pseudoscience at best. There's no way I'm ever going to be able to prove this to a scientific-minded person. Definitely not to a panel of peers who are going to give me a big government grant, because guess what? If this stuff exists, we finally found a way to spy on the enemy. The biggest thing I could tell people, the closest thing to a scientific method validation we can get with electronic voice phenomena is repeatable data. The same thing said over and over again. This is the closest we can get. When I investigate a place, I'm going in 10 times or I'm not going at all.
So I want to ask that. I know Everett is a believer in this, and I'm probably a non-believer in this, but what about the ghost box? Every time I hear somebody using those ghost box, I cannot hear anything. I can never make out. It's just a lot of, I know some people can just kind of pick up on it. And I just don't hear anything. I just hear a lot of stations in the background. What's your thought on the ghost box?
I have two trains of thought on the ghost box. Number one, I understand why people are so skeptical of it, because it's not a recorder, it's a receiver. This thing is taking in stuff from the outside world and playing it through a speaker. That being said, the biggest issue I have with the ghost box to people using it is they do not have a guide, okay? They don't have a standard, a certain level. So here's my level I came up with in my book. It's called a made communication. That stands for something that comes to your spirit box is multiple word, audible to the ear, intelligently communicated, or in direct response to a stimuli or event. An example. You're sitting in a room, you got your spirit box going. Everyone loves that sound.
You do that well.
And you ask the question, is there anybody out there? And all you hear is. Now, if this is Ghost Adventures, you just heard from dead Aunt Mabel and she said demon four times, right? No, this is not what we want. We're looking for something that's multiple word, audible to the ear, intelligently communicated, and in direct response to a stimuli. Great example. I was investigating at a local museum here in actually Mount Pearl, which is a city on the outside of St. John's. It's actually where I'm from. I was born in Mount Pearl. Admiralty House Communications Museum is notoriously haunted by a World War I ghost who was electrified to death, and this place was used to spy on the Germans. So very interesting that there was a lot of memorabilia in the place, but Mr. Candy was his name, and unfortunately he did die on site. During one of my investigations, I had an EVP come through that said Jonathan, which is my full name. And I turned around and looked at the spirit box and said, yeah, that's me. It said the Lads. The Lads is actually short for Life After Death Society, which is my paranormal investigating group. I said, yeah, I'm Jonathan. And Lads is my investigation group. And then it said member. Like this all happened within 15 seconds. That's multiple word, audible to the ear, intelligent communicated, and in direct response or stimuli. I was the stimuli in that case. Okay, that is far more credible than just hearing gobbledygook. And I don't think I think the problem is people are taking something that it's not evidence and trying to make it sound like evidence. I hear things on the spirit box that are 4 or 5 words long and in direct response to something that's actually going on. Guys, I think we got a winner there. So I think a lot of the stuff that we catch on spirit boxes is garbage. Absolutely. But I think there are some very credible, valid EVP that come through that. And I don't consider them EVP either, by the way. Electronic voice phenomena is something that is coming through pretty much nowhere. There is no vehicle, which is what makes it so mysterious and gets recorded on a recorder. A spirit box EVP has to be classified as just that, a spirit box EVP, because it's not an EVP from a traditional standpoint. The vehicle is there. It's coming through the spirit box. I think the classification system that you see on the TV shows and stuff like that are a bit silly too. They're usually based on how well you can hear an EVP. There are times when I got that spirit box going, man, I can hear stuff in real time and communicate in real time. And there are times when I get nothing but gobbledygook and I don't understand a thing. Do I think it's more credible to go after a made communication? You bet your ass. And if you ever came to me with an EVP, which was one word long from a spirit box, I wouldn't even listen. I wouldn't waste my time. It has to be multiple word. Remember what I told you. The only thing we can get to make this any kind of closer to a scientifically proven thing is repeatable data. The same voice comes through over 20 stations over the course of, like, say, 10 seconds saying a sentence. Mm-hmm. That, my friend, in my opinion, is far more credible than.
Maybe you'll make me a believer yet. You know, I'm still, somebody's got to make me a believer. So we'll maybe I'll get there. I'll get there someday.
Well, Jonathan, what do you think of the ghost box sessions where maybe somebody will turn it on and it will just cycle through for 10, 15 seconds and there's absolutely nothing. And then they will ask something along the lines of how many people here or how many spirits are here tonight? And so far we're all well and good. Sounds like a standard ghost box session. But then you start getting these voices that come through that one might say 7, one might say 19, one might say 25, one might say 2. It's weird when I hear these, it's weird that it will be so silent. And then when that question is asked, you get a numerical response from multiple people. But I question the idea that all those numbers are different because you would think that they would at least be close.
Aha. So, what if I told you that, okay, so in order for me to answer that question, first off, we have to accept the fact that what's coming through the spirit box is an actual EVP, okay? So in that hypothetical situation, let's say that truly is the real deal, okay? You're getting into questions about how is it even possible to capture an EVP there, because what you're talking about is the vehicle on which it comes through and how did it get in, like, how does it come through the spirit box? So in order for me to intelligently communicate with you from the quote-unquote other side, I literally have to be somewhere else. And this is what I get into a lot with my book, as well things I've talked about an incredible amount over the years on radio shows, is the idea that I believe that EVP is a non-local causality. It's coming from somewhere else. It's coming from an extra dimension of space that runs parallel to ours, that every day gets proven to be right. Thank you, Einstein. By the way, those gravitational waves, another feather in the cap for us folks who believe in parallel dimensions. If you don't know why, truly look at the realm of science in that regard. The smaller you get, the more paranormal it gets. It's so interesting. Please, the most paranormal thing ever written. Like, even Hawking himself said it's really weird. So please check it out. Anyway, gonna go back just a little bit. The idea that these entities can see other entities in the room, the idea that they can speak to the spirit box, and the idea that they're communicating in real time is relative to us. Hypothetical for you. What if time doesn't exist where these 17 spirits are, and what they're seeing is not what you're seeing or what the other spirit is seeing? It gets even better. What if there's layers? What if there's six or seven dimensions of space and six or seven different spirits who can't see each other but can see a couple of the other ones? And, you know, there are many, many theories around there. What fascinates me is the fact that you're getting numbers playing through the spirit box. We'll go back to the bare basics. You're getting an intelligent response to your question. And unless the answer is one, you know, between one and 10, really, you're pretty much going to get a dual response. 22 technically is a double word, you know. Like, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people, when they're doing their investigations, they try to go with yes, no questions. And I really hate that. I don't want you to do that no more. Hear that, investigators? No more yes, no questions. Instead of saying how many spirits are here, try saying, can you name all the spirits that are here? Try something like that. Is it possible for spirits to see other spirits? Is it possible that different spirits are on different planes and can't see other spirits? Can I possibly say the word spirits any more than what I have tonight? These are all things that are yet to be figured out.
It's so complicated.
Kim, it really is. And I think, you know, a lot of paranormal investigators try to boil it down to the simplest of things. And honestly, I had never really thought about it in that way. And it does kind of make sense. But, you know, I always had a little bit of a hard time rationalizing it, because technically, if you ask how many people and you get numbers, it is an intelligent response and it does fit the question. It seems to be beyond the idea of just, you know, some random bleed over or something like that. I could just never really get into the idea that, well, they're all just, you know, dropping random numbers. It kind of confused me a little bit, because it seemed to test the validity of the spirit box a little bit. And as having said that, I think they are, Kim, you called me a believer in them. I would say that I think they warrant further study. I think there are a lot of instances where frequencies can get picked up and mistaken for a voice. And I've heard it, and Jonathan, I'm sure you've heard it too, where you hear something and you go, wait a minute, I know that commercial. Just because, mm-hmm. you know, you can tell, you can hear it. But, you know, I have to say thank you for kind of clarifying or giving me a new perspective on that.
And hey, man, if you want ways to, I call it cleaning up your evidence, like the idea that, you know, much like podcasting, we want to make sure our first recording is the most least contaminated as possible. It's really simple. Guys, everybody has a spot on their radio that has a lot of talk radio shows. Just disregard there. Just disregard us. It's as simple as that. 93.5, 94.7, 99.1, and 101.1. As soon as my radio scans to there, I don't even consider it data. I don't take it, because I know there's lots of talk and I know there's lots of commercials and there's songs and stuff like that. Let's just stick with what's coming through. Here's another cool idea too with the spirit box that I really, really recommend for people to do, especially those who are skeptical of it. Let the thing run by itself. Let the thing run by itself with a recorder close by. you'll find out pretty quick when you look through the audio file where those voices are coming through. And if you're noticing that every 120 seconds there's a voice coming through, that's radio, because you're literally scanning over that station over and over and over again. If you notice there's a random sentence in the middle of there for no reason whatsoever, oh, maybe you got something. Oh, and I can't say enough. Take the antenna out of the damn thing. Make sure you have an external power source. And my favorite part of all, you can actually get these things with silenced radio sweep. You don't have to listen to, you can get them without that. You truly can. And a lot of the EVP that come through it are soft and gentle as angels. It's so nice to hear. Maybe they are angels. Moving on.
Yeah, but before we get back to true EVPs, I have to say that, you know, those ones where you have the echo and reverb and delay, the more you process the signal, to me, in my opinion, the less interested I am. I know that that's probably a terrible view, but I would rather hear the static and hear what the actual signal is than to hear it processed through any number of different effects, because I know what effects can do.
Absolutely. And I think that to kind of summarize what you mean is that if you scrub it, you're tampering with your own data. And that's something that I truly believe in. I cut it and I turn it off. That's it. If I slow it down, it's because it's fast. But even then, usually I don't have to do that. Most of the stuff I catch is pretty good. I got a lot of garbage I could do that with to make it sound good if you really want. But, nah, not really my thing.
Getting back to EVPs, you know, not many people are carrying around a reel-to-reel recorder anymore. And certainly people aren't grabbing the cassette recorders anymore. Everybody's gone to digital recorders, or I choke on myself a little bit as I say this, apps to record things.
Oh, God. See, the problem with the apps, oh, man, you know what drives me nuts? You got the K2 meter up against the wall, and someone's there with their cell phone filming it, and it's giving them responses by looking at the beeping light on the K2, and this thing picks up freaking milligauss. It literally detects cell phones. If you have a cell phone on next to your K2 meter, it'll go off. It's that simple.
And nobody anyway. Leaves their cell phone in the car when they're ghost hunting. They always have to bring it, you know, just in case, you know, you get that emergency text.
Oh, man. Leave all your technology. Yeah, so standardized digital recorders, the higher quality, the better, although it's not necessarily needed. I'm going to be honest with you. I think what it is, people were so much more positive and more in the believer camp back when we had the reel-to-reel stuff versus nowadays, that they kind of attached their old feelings of this is the real deal, so to speak, to the reels. But see, the reality of it is, what you're actually getting in true electronic voice phenomena can be converted to a WAV form and put on a recorder anyway. So it will still look the same. You got to think about it that way. Two things I'm going to say about that, though. My recorders, I've always tried to have at least five on hand that are all charged, ready to go, and they're standard. I use a lot of grid patterns when I used to investigate. In other words, I'd actually be the guy who hung his recorders up in the air. You guys are in radio. You know that better quality comes from hanging your microphone up high. It just works that way. I've often made small grid patterns on the floor and actually had my recorder suspended by the ceiling. So if I did, you know, manage to actually capture something, I could actually pinpoint where it was from in the room, just judging by how loud it was. For instance, if something was really loud in the left corner of the room, it'd be more quiet in the right. And I can put all those in on the recorders on the same settings and see where it came from in the room, which is a really cool, handy thing to have to debunk a lot of stuff. Can I just throw this out there for people? Having one standardized recorder with you, you could probably catch an EVP, but you put three or four of those things in a room and you get the EVP on only one recorder and not the other three. That's paranormal in itself. Don't deny yourself the ability to capture more. Please use multiple recorders and definitely have a standardized recorder outside your room just in case someone walks by. The digital recorder is something that I adore it. I actually adore it. Number one, it's small, it's compact, it's easy to use, it's handy. And hey, here's the really fun part. It has multiple uses. The recorder is great, not only for time stamping. You can literally say what time it is while you're investigating and be able to tell people at what time of day you caught stuff there. Really good. Here's another thing. A lot of digital recorders are going to pick up a lot of different stuff. Be very, very careful. Don't be afraid to make your own Faraday's cage. Highly recommend it. All you need is a little bit of copper wire to ground the son bitch out. You could have this beautiful thing for a mere few dollars. It costs nothing to block out almost all radio waves, guys. There are different ways of investigating. I'm all about taking the modernized stuff now and trying to make them more credible. And I think one of the first things you do is try to block out those contaminants. We are no longer recording things with a magnet on tape. We are now basically digitizing a copy of what's going on onto a tape. It's a little different. The actual science in the recorder is really wild, but it's still the same thing ultimately. It's just a different medium of traveling, or sorry, of showing the same information in a different way. I would love to do an experiment with you, my friend. Let's put a reel-to-reel recorder and a regular digital recorder in the room, and let's see if we can capture the same EVP on both.
I would love to do that.
That'd be awesome.
You've done that before, obviously. So how often do you, I know Newfoundland, I'm sure has a lot of haunted places. How often do you go on paranormal sites and use the equipment?
I'll be quite honest with you. I've started a new career about 3 years ago. I'm a foster parent to special needs children. So when kids come to me, they're very high needs. I'm a very, very busy guy compared to what I was. And I always tell people jokingly that I'm too concerned with the living to be dealing with the dead like I used to, right? Which is the ongoing joke. I get out a couple times a year, usually for fundraisers now at this point. I was so lucky this past October to actually get to investigate a very haunted museum. The Arts and Culture Center is a very well-known place, very haunted stack part of that building. So am I getting out as much as I'd like to? Definitely not. But I've got enough data from, 8 years of doing this that I could talk forever about it. It's like all I did was investigate for about 6 years. And then there was a little bit of a wall where I was doing more podcasting stuff. But the reality of it is it was constant. Like every weekend I was going somewhere, going to Cape Spear, going to Dead Man's Pond, going somewhere. Bodies of water was a thing I did one summer where I'd investigate a body of water pretty much every week and just be there at 1-2 o'clock in the morning when no one's around. And the stuff I got, it's just wild. I highly recommend anybody out there who just loves this stuff. What are you waiting for? Go get a recorder. Go have some fun. This is really fun too. When you actually get into it and learn how to do it. And a lot of people are always looking for that holy grail. To me, the holy grail is the multiple word, audible to the ear, intelligently communicating in direct response to a stimuli. You get that, I think you've got something paranormal on that recorder of yours.
I was going to ask you, I know that we're pushing the time here, but just real quick, your podcast. How long have you been on the air with your podcast, and what got you started with that? I just want to kind of wrap up with that because I did get a chance to listen to it, and it's an extremely well done podcast, and I would love for our listeners to go over there and check you out. But how did you get started with the podcast?
The Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Oh, my beloved show. This actually started when I was a kid. I was one of those weird kids that would go to his summer home and have no friends to hang out with, no one to talk to. It was really, really boring. So on the way to the cabin, I'd always buy a couple of magazines or something to keep me interested. I'm also an avid wrestling fan, but that's beside the point. I pick up a couple of wrestling magazines, and one fateful day, I came across an old copy of the beloved Weekly World News. And that is where the fascination with the strange and the odd began. As a child at that point, I was a young man, 11, 12 years old, reading stories about Elvis still being alive and Bat Boy and all these crazy things. Bigfoot took me in and raised me, you know, these kind of crazy off-the-wall stories that just took the paranormal and turned it up a dial and made it interesting and fun. I do believe that my show to this day is based on the Weekly World News, and how you listen to my show is how you'd read that magazine. You turn the page and it's different things. My show is actually a segmented show. There's a news portion, a cryptid portion, and a guest portion, and all kinds of weird and wonderful things in between. It's never the same show twice. And having a variety show is important to me, because I feel like talk shows, there's a lot of talk shows out there. There's a lot of news shows out there. There's a lot of crypto shows out there. There's very few shows that touch a little bit on every one. And, you know, I love the idea that you can turn on my show and just have a different experience every time. I think that's important. Beyond the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast is everywhere. You guys can get that everywhere. You name it. You name a platform. It's there. ODDTONEWFOUNDLAND Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Podbean is my favorite place. It's kind of like where I kind of hang out the most. It's where I am. If you subscribe on the Podbean, I'll give you guys a shout out. So that's usually how it works. Okay. Check it out. 3 episodes drop the first of every month, and there's usually some bonus content as well. Like, for instance, October, I actually did 31 episodes. It was wild.
Oh, that's crazy.
It was a lot of producing. I was like, what have I got myself into? I did 10 at a time, and they're all 6 minutes each. So that was my plan and my goal. But I did it. I survived it. Numbers went through the roof. I nearly died, but it was great.
What's the weirdest or most unusual, most haunted place in Newfoundland that people should at least visit once?
Got to say Cape Spear, man. Got to say Cape Spear. 19 investigations I've done down there. I'd say 16, technically 15. I'm going to say 15 of those investigations, I caught something. That's really high. That's really high. Like, I've gone to a haunted museum 20 times and caught nothing. I've gone to different places many times and caught very little. Cape Spear always, always, never disappoints. And if it does disappoint, go back the next day. Highly recommend being down there in the middle of February at 2 o'clock in the morning, freezing your butt off. You will capture something, and the ghosts will appreciate it. Trust me.
Excellent. You know, we're just about out of time. I hate to let you go, because I feel like we just started to get rolling, and I have so many more questions. You know, one day soon, I'm going to be bugging you to come back on for another hour or so.
Well, I'd love to come back on and maybe the next time bring some of those EVP I've been talking about. How does that sound?
Oh, that sounds awesome. Fantastic.
Maybe it's about time I start letting you guys hear some really good ghost box EVPs. Maybe make the skeptical a little less skeptical. Ha ha ha.
I think that's what the world needs.
I'll hold you guys to it. Take care of yourselves.
You too. Thanks. Yeah. Thank you so much. We are up against the clock. We got to step out for a little bit of an extended break here. We'll be right back on Extension 13.